A new generation phone for a new network. Samsung's 5G-enabled Galaxy S10 goes on sale in South Korea, 2 days after carriers there launched their first 5G services. But Samsung's premium phones are struggling to be profitable. It's one reason the firm says it's heading for its lowest quarterly profit in 2 years, though its semiconductor business is the main profit driver.
Another setback for the president and his push to slow the flood of migrants after a U.S. judge on Monday halted the Trump administration's policy of sending some asylum seekers back across the southern border to wait out their cases in Mexico. Because of limits on how long children are legally allowed to be held in detention, many of the families are released to await U.S. immigration court hearings, a process that can take years and is better known as catch and release.
Food suppliers in Mexico were eager to do business with Amazon last fall when the e-commerce giant started selling non-perishable food. But as competition between Amazon and Walmart's Mexico unit heated up, some of those suppliers say they felt they had to pick sides. Two suppliers who stopped selling to Amazon that Walmart accounts for more than half of their supermarket sales in Mexico.
WGN Radio's Daily Conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the program. Today is Tuesday. It's April 9th. It's 5:10 in the morning, and here we are again with another edition of The Opening Bell and another business day getting underway. Thanks for tuning in. We appreciate it this morning. We've put together a good broadcast for you. This morning, we'll focus on the business of the economy of health and our genes and how that may impact poverty, how poverty may impact our genes. We'll have the author and lead researcher on some new information and new evidence out from Northwestern University about this. Thomas McDade will be with us in our first segment this morning to talk about what his findings, what his research has found. A little bit later in the program, Mark Horner will be back with us from Fairhaven Wealth Management. Mark's going to be here today to talk a little bit about National Retirement Planning Week, so we'll do that in our second segment this morning at about 5:38. And in between, we will give you the latest business news and markets, news, weather, traffic, and sports as well as we move forward this morning with today's edition of The Opening Bell. But first, let's begin on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk. The opening bell rings this morning after falling shares of General Electric and Boeing sent the Dow Jones Industrials down around the close yesterday. Factory orders impacted stocks as well, as the Commerce Department reported orders dropped 0.5% in February due to weak demand for computers and electronics products and conditions in that industry as well. At the closing bell yesterday, the Dow was down about 84 points. This morning, the numbers are flat for the Dow futures and NASDAQ futures and S&P futures as we head to the opening bell. All three are down fractionally this morning. As we look around the rest of the globe, in Asia, markets are generally higher. In Japan, up by nearly 0.25%. And in Europe, as we check the markets there, they are in the green as well this morning. In London, higher by about 0.25%, and in France, higher by about 0.25%. And crude oil is at $64.60 a barrel in New York. That is up about 20 cents a barrel. A couple of stories as we begin this morning. First, the Trump administration threatening to impose tariffs on about $11 billion of imports from the European Union. The administration says it's responding to EU subsidies to French aviation giant Airbus. That's Boeing's biggest rival. The sanctions would hit a range of goods, including jetliners and passenger helicopters, motorcycles, cheese, wine, and ski clothes. The U.S. Trade Representative's office is citing a World Trade Organization finding that subsidies to Airbus have repeatedly caused what the WTO calls adverse effects for the United States. Also this morning, Sears Holdings CEO Eddie Lampert wants to reclaim full ownership of Sears Hometown and Outlet Stores, the businesses that were spun off in 2012. He says he's gotten a proposal to put that forward now to the new owners of those stores. Lampert, his ESL Investments hedge fund and affiliates own close to 59% of them already. The offer is said to be around $21 million. Sears has closed more than 3,500 stores and laid off about 250,000 workers over the past 15 years as sales have tanked. The company filed Chapter 11 bankruptcy last October, but has begun to emerge from that. Announced last week it was going to open some smaller stores across the country. Let's begin front and center this morning with a new study, new evidence from a new study that poverty can become embedded in our genes. The lead researcher on this joins us this morning from Northwestern University, Thomas McDade, professor of anthropology in the Weinberg College of Arts and Sciences at Northwestern, also director of the Laboratory for Human Biology Research. Mr. McDade, good morning. Welcome to the Opening Bell.
Good morning. It's a pleasure to be here. Thank you for having me.
Interesting research. I think people have guessed, and there has been some studies before that show that our socioeconomic status has a number of powerful impacts, but the idea that it's embedded in our genes, that something's embedded in our genes, is concerning.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. There's a lot of literature, as you just referenced, to the importance of socioeconomic status and affecting our health. And in fact, it's probably the most important determinant of human health, where you are in terms of the socioeconomic ladder, your level of education or your level of your parents' education, your income, your occupation. You know, people tend to think of genes or lifestyle choices like, you know, what you eat and whether you smoke as the most important factors that determine our health. And those things do matter, but more broadly, socioeconomic status is a really important determinant of health. And that was really what motivated this analysis, this study, because there's a new area of research called epigenetics, which talks about and shows us that we inherit genes from our parents, and, you know, those are fixed at birth. But what really matters is whether genes get expressed. And when they get expressed, they do things in our cells and in our bodies that impact our physiology and ultimately our health. And whether a gene gets expressed is really determined based on marks that are laid down on top of the sequence of DNA that you get from your parents. And it turns out that those sequence, those biochemical marks that get laid down on top of our genes, those are affected by experience, by the environments that we grow up in. So our study sought to investigate the impact that socioeconomic status might have on a particular type of epigenetic mark called DNA methylation. And we found big impacts that really on almost 10% of the genes in the body, there was an epigenetic mark associated with a person's socioeconomic status. And that was a surprising and, I think, potentially important finding.
And so we all, as you talked about it too, when we have something in our genes that's going to impact us either negatively or positively, in this case probably negatively, what are we talking about in terms of health impacts, and what kind of time frame are we talking about? Is it something that a generation ago that my family would have left me, would have put something on my genetic markers that in my genes about poverty, or is it something that's happening currently to me and my family?
Yeah, that's a great question. At this point, there is not a lot of evidence in humans for what we call the intergenerational transmission of epigenetic marks. So what happened to your parents is not likely to have directly affected your genome. It would probably affect you in other ways, obviously, but not directly through your epigenetics. But one of the things that's interesting and important about epigenetics is they do leave this mark on the genes. They literally these experiences literally alter the structure and function of our genome, and that is a durable process. So these marks get laid down. A lot of them happen in infancy and childhood, but really throughout our lives that these processes can happen. And they affect the cellular machinery in ways that have an impact on function later in life. And so this is for scientists like me, this is an exciting opportunity to perhaps discover the ways that our bodies remember, I'm doing air quotes here, remember, in a sense, the experiences, the environments that we live in, and shape our physiology and health later in life. And in terms of where we are with the research, we're still in a discovery phase. We know that these processes matter to health, but we don't know exactly how, and we don't know yet what we can do about them. So my study was focusing on trying to document the extent to which socioeconomic status may have an impact on the epigenome, and to identify some of the genes and some of the physiological processes that might be sensitive to the impact of socioeconomic status. And then the next step is to figure out, okay, how are those genes expressed, and are they expressing themselves in positive or negative ways with respect to our health? That's where we'll be going next.
Thomas McDade is professor of anthropology. He's on with us this morning. Mr. McDade, I want to get back to our conversation. I know more questions have to be answered here, but what's the concern about this later in life for health? Is it the potential threat of cancer, infectious diseases, or is it going to be a wide range of potential diseases?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is one of the important and vexing issues with respect to how poverty and how socioeconomic status more broadly affects our health. It affects everything. It affects people who have lower levels of socioeconomic status are at increased risk for most cancers. They're at increased risk for cardiovascular diseases, heart attacks, strokes. They're at increased risk for metabolic diseases like diabetes, and they're also at increased risk for dementia and also disability, quality of life later in life. And people live shorter lives. So compared to people who don't graduate high school, those of us who are fortunate to have pursued higher education, get a graduate degree, we tend to live almost 10 years longer. It impacts a wide range of health issues that we're concerned about. And this is one of the interesting things about our study is that the pattern of findings where we document the large number of studies across a wide range of physiological systems that are touched by socioeconomic status. It's commensurate with this notion that socioeconomic status affects a wide range of health outcomes.
And also concerning with all of the other implications of what's happening in the world today with inequality and poverty, implications and the concern for the future generations of folks who are involved in those situations, they're going to be looking to this study potentially for some guidance.
Yeah, this is something I think we should all be concerned about. There are growing levels of inequality in our society, and those come at a cost in terms of our health. And as you and I'm sure many of your listeners know, health costs are skyrocketing. And we as a society in the United States, we pay a tremendous proportion of our GDP. We invest a lot of dollars in healthcare costs, nearly 20% of GDP. And that's much higher than other countries that actually have more favorable health outcomes. Other countries spend less money on healthcare, but people actually live longer in those countries. So, we have to, I think, reconsider what we consider health policy. In some regard, social policies and economic policies might actually return dividends with respect to health and may end up, in some cases, paying for themselves. So my hope with this study is that it provides some further evidence and perhaps some motivation to look at the fundamental causes of health in our society and maybe sort of address the root causes before they manifest as problems.
If in a utopia with poverty solved, would it just return our genome, these 10% of genes that are impacted to their normal status? Or do you, when you perhaps get rich, do your genes improve in a way that is different than what this study shows?
Yeah, well, I don't think we're ever going to root out inequality and stratification in society. I mean, I think that's just probably, and it's virtually all societies, there will be people who have more than other people, and some people have less, and this is going to affect our biology. I think what we can do is try to blunt the negative consequences of inequality with respect to health. And, we can help put a floor under some people, policies that blunt the adverse effects of being at the lower end of the income distribution. I think will go a long way to improving health in society more generally and saving us dollars. And we would expect to see that there would be an impact on the epigenome as well, those kinds of policies.
Are these problems or the impact on these genes, is this something that might be edited someday? I know there have been discussions and talk about potentially editing our genomes to fix problems with diseases and other things. Is this one of those fixable things?
Mm-hmm. Possible. So it's not possible now, but it might be possible down the road that we could edit some of these epigenetic marks biochemically in cells in our body and then perhaps blunt the adverse effects of these kinds of processes on our health. That's a long way off. But as you say, some folks are already experimenting with editing genes in terms of the sequences of DNA that we inherit from our parents. And that, that raises a number of ethical concerns because you would pass those genes on to subsequent generations. When we talk about editing the epigenome, the marks that are laid down on top of the DNA sequences you inherit from your parents, we're probably not talking about inheritance across generations in that regard. So I think that's something that we should consider down the road for sure.
All right. Well, Mr. McDade, we appreciate this interesting research, and we'll be watching to see what you find next, okay?
Thank you very much.
All right, Thomas McDade, professor of anthropology at the Weinberg College of Arts and Sciences at Northwestern University, director of the Laboratory for Human Biology Research.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome back to the program. Thanks for being here with us on our Tuesday edition of The Opening Bell. It is National Retirement Planning Week 2019, April 8th through the 12th. Time to sort of lock down what you're doing for retirement. We're happy to have Mark Horner back with us today, president of Fairhaven Wealth Management, to talk a little bit about this and some retirement issues. Mark, good morning. Welcome back. Thanks for coming in.
Great to be with you, Steve.
Good to have you back here. And sorry we haven't had you back sooner in our new digs, but welcome.
It's your offices are spectacular. Yeah, yeah. So thanks for having me.
No, you're absolutely welcome. And we love having you here because this is one of the topics that I think a lot of us think about, if not constantly, at least every day, maybe more than that. What is the biggest thing that we should know as we mark this National Retirement Planning Week? Is it that we're not doing a good enough job, or we can do better, or how would you give?
Yeah, I think not doing a good enough job is maybe a little too harsh. Right. I think there's always room for improvement, and so I think the landscape in retirement is constantly changing, and so it's just it's important for people to be talking about issues around retirement. So from very beginning, and the importance of getting started saving early, and the power of compound interest, and then as somebody's approaching retirement a few years out, maybe taking an opportunity to have a practice run at retirement. So I think across the spectrum, starting out or with retirement on the horizon, there are issues to be talking about.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting. A practice run at retirement. What would that look like?
So with all humility, I think this is actually an original idea of mine. I've not seen it anywhere
else.
I've
not heard it before. Yeah.
And so the idea that we talk about with our clients is, so once you retire and the part actually retire, you don't really get a second chance to have another run at it. And so because it's such a big decision and a big change in people's lives, why not take some time to actually practice it before you pull the ripcord? And so what that might look like is if somebody's 5 years from retirement, 10 years from retirement even, and they've got their retirement goal in mind, they think they're going to need an income, whatever the number is per month, let's say it's $5,000. Well, while they are still working, go ahead and try living on that number that you think you're going to need in retirement. And so maybe you set up a separate account, put that $5,000 a month into that account, and live on that money only, and see how that actually feels. So that gives you a chance to adjust. That maybe if your assumptions were a bit too rosy, it gives you a chance to make some changes before you actually pull the ripcord.
Interesting. So I shouldn't ask my boss for a 2 month leave then and just go out and start traveling the world. You didn't mean that.
I did not mean that. What I meant was the actual budget that we think we're going to need to spend in retirement. Let's try that. You got to keep your job though.
Right. And this is the thing that really kind of sometimes keeps me awake at night, and that is, we know what the expenses are now. We know,
right.
But what about 10 years from now,
right,
or 15 years from now? That is, first of all, how do I sleep better at night knowing that I'm preparing for whatever that number is going to be?
Yeah, so you're touching on the a financial term of inflation, and the one of the biggies that's going up in cost a lot is healthcare. It's, you know, I think very difficult to predict the future. I would say, though, any sort of written plan. So this is true whether somebody's looking to apply to colleges or map out their career or certainly in retirement. Having written goals greatly improves the likelihood of somebody achieving those goals. So I would say anybody that's got any level of uncomfort with or discomfort with their retirement goals, having a written plan will go a long way towards alleviating some of that discomfort, and then updating it regularly. You know, you mentioned earlier thinking about this every day. You don't need to update your retirement plan every day, but once a year, once every 18 months to do an update, I think is a great discipline.
And I think it's generational too. I think for people like me who are 50 or over, you probably think about retirement a little bit more than, let's say, somebody in their 30s.
Sure.
And the group in their 30s right now, they're just dealing with paycheck to paycheck, aren't they, in terms of how much money not only are they saving for emergencies, but for retirement.
So absolutely, and that's an economic reality. When we all get our first job out of college, we're not making the big bucks yet. And student loans, that's a reality today. And so there are many demands on anybody's month-to-month cash flow. But I think a very important factor to keep in mind is that the power of compound interest cannot be overestimated. And so the starting early towards any financial goal is going to give anybody a massive advantage. And so that means even if it's $10-$20 a month at your first job, getting in the habit early of saving and letting that money really, really work for you, mm-hmm. and then adjusting upward as your career moves along. Maybe you get a raise and you increase that saving. Starting early is critical. So again, my first job out of college, I made $18,000 a year. I completely understand that there are economic realities, but starting early is just something that I would hate to see anybody pass up.
Yeah, and I think if time travel were a real thing, if that were a thing, I would go back and tell my younger self to do that. Because when you, let's say you have a 401k, you don't notice it. You really don't notice it if you're putting away just a little bit, and you know it comes out of your paycheck, you don't even see it to know that it's gone.
You do not. Yeah. You do not. And it's interesting, your comment about talking about your younger self. So just recently, in Washington, the Senate was holding hearings around retirement preparedness. And Senator Collins from Maine related a personal story. When she first got involved in government in her 30s, she cashed out her 401k plan to buy a car.
Oh, wow.
And she related how, in hindsight, what an awful decision that was, and that she wished she had somebody to talk to about that. And for me, that story was important for a couple of reasons. What one is, it was great to hear somebody talk about making mistakes. We all make mistakes. Mm-hmm. We all make mistakes. And then also relating that perspective, you know, down the line, looking back on your younger self, you wish you had some financial decisions to make over again.
You know, and I think that hearing that you're talking about, it sort of there was a focus too on women and the special challenges, the financial challenges women are having with retirement planning.
Yeah.
Talk to us a little bit about that.
Well, so that's awfully complicated and a reality. So women in general versus men have longer life expectancies. So that means there's a longer period that they need to plan for in retirement. Women in general have shorter work history, so that impacts their funding sometimes for full funding under Social Security. And then I would say the financial services industry in general, my industry in general, does a pretty poor job of communicating with women. There's study after study where women collectively rank the financial services industry incredibly low, second only to maybe a used car experience.
Wow.
Right, it's pretty. It's embarrassing for my industry, and so I think again it's a variety of issues, but something our industry could do a much better and needs to do a much better job of is making information around financial planning more accessible to everybody, but women in particular.
Mm-hmm. So, National Retirement Planning Week, is there a checklist of things that we can do this week to I don't want to say celebrate this week, but to some of the things that we've talked about, are there things that I can go and do today to make sure that I'm on the right track?
Sure. So if your employer has got a company retirement plan, a 401k plan, and you are not participating, and they offer a match of some kind, so the company is putting money into that account on your behalf, if you aren't participating to a level that you are maximizing that match, that should be something that you evaluate today, because of what you're doing, what anybody's doing by not participating up to at least the match amount, is they're effectively declining a raise.
Yeah, throwing away free money.
They are.
Yeah.
They are. So figuring out how to adjust that, how to adjust the budget to be able to participate, to not turn away that free money. And then, you know, there are big numbers get thrown around in retirement, but I think it's important to remember that the little numbers matter too. And so evaluating household expenses and looking for opportunities to shave a few dollars, you know, we all have opportunities to maybe cut out some unnecessary expenses. And it doesn't mean you got to eat mac and cheese at every single at every single meal. So you can strike a balance between, you know, having fun and enjoying your life, but still creating enough extra cash flow to save for retirement.
And before you think about going for the new car with the 401k, maybe think twice or three times about that.
At least have a conversation right. with a financial planner.
Mark, how can people get a hold of you and have a conversation with you one-on-one about some of these things if they want?
Yeah, so we're building a new office out in Wheaton. So we're going to be relocating from Oak Brook to Wheaton. But the best way to contact us is the information on our website, which is fairhavenwealth.com.
Mark, it's always good talking. I could spend the whole hour talking with you about some of these issues. So come back and join us again sometime.
I'm going to take you up on that, Steve.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Mark Horner, president of Fairhaven Wealth Management. Again, the website is fairhavenwealth.com.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
On the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk, the stocks flat this morning as we head to the opening bell. Dow, NASDAQ, and S&P futures all fractionally lower this morning. Now WGN Agriculture and Commodities with Orion Samuelson.
Good morning, Steve. Another sign of spring. We received our first weekly crop progress report yesterday from USDA, reporting that 2% of the nation's corn crop is planted. That matches the five-year average and pretty much was in line with expectations. But there's a storm that could bring rain and potentially heavy snow to northwestern portions of the U.S. Corn Belt, could drop 6 to 12 inches of snow and a few local amounts up to 18 inches. Parts of South Dakota, Nebraska, Iowa, Minnesota, and Wisconsin. And so at the end of the trading day yesterday, we saw the July wheat contract down 2.25 cents a bushel, July corn down 2.75, and May, July, and August soybeans were all unchanged. Livestock futures at the Merck yesterday, the June lean hog contract down $1.15 a hundredweight, but June cattle ended up 15 cents, and April feeder cattle up 62 cents a hundredweight. The Wisconsin FFA has announced the Hall of Fame honorees coming up at their annual convention in June, and three men will go into the FFA Wisconsin Hall of Fame: Ken Natsky, Jerry Sherwin, and Jerry Wendt. Congratulations to those honorees. You have a great day. I'm Orion Samuelson.
Thanks, Orion. You too. On the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk Outlook for Tuesday, April 9th, the March Small Business Optimism Index leads off this morning. Small business optimism up, according to the latest report, shows a tenth of a point increase over February. It's an indication that small businesses are driving economic growth after January's government shutdown temporarily rattled the small business sector. The National Federation of Independent Business reports its latest index shows small business owners continue to create jobs or expanding their operations and are seeing strong sales. The job openings and labor turnover survey for February is out today. The forecast shows an annual rate of 7.55 million, down from 7.58 million in January. Also, the IMF World Economic Outlook is due out as well today. More earnings start tomorrow and through the end of the week. Some of the airlines tomorrow, the banks on Friday.